The title of today's session is What is Bowen Theory and How Can PPI Members Use It? And our guest thought leader today is Thomas Schur, and our host is John A. Warnick. I have a short, purposeful quote that I'll share, and then I'll turn it over to you, John A. The quote is by Socrates, "Know thyself." So thanks again, everyone, for joining us. John A., I'll turn it over to you.
You know, I would amend Socrates' quote. I would say, know thyself, know thy family. There you go. Tom has been a member of PPI for 4 or 5 years now. We're very grateful for his membership, for his expertise, for his contributions to the community. Those of you who have not had the pleasure of meeting this man in person will find that as a retired professor, he continues to delight in teaching and sharing and asking questions to provoke thought. He is a lifetime learner when it comes to Bowen family systems theory, has spent an awful lot of time thinking about how it applies into the purposeful planning world. I don't think we have anyone better equipped to lead us in the discussion that he's going to lead today. And just as a heads up, I'll let everybody know, I'm going to turn my camera off so that you're focused on Tom. Tom's really going to, this will be more presentation, not the traditional interview. Tom and I talked about that, and we both feel strongly that in the time that we have, in the interest of getting as much to you as possible, it would be best to let him do this as presentation. Please jot down any questions that you have or any observations you'd want to share, because he is going to reserve time at the end for questions and comments. So with that, Tom, it's yours.
Thank you, John A. Well, I'm going to present Bowen theory and how it can be useful for PPI members. First, I want to say that Bowen theory is a very comprehensive theory. It's been developed for over 50 years with a lot of research and a lot of validation from the natural sciences. It is unique. Some people have said that Bowen created a very unique theory that is also very congruent with the natural sciences. So with this much comprehensive theory, I'm certainly not able to summarize it. So what I'm going to do is present the practice of it and then point to the underlying theory so that you can understand what the application is like, but also understand the basis for that application. And I'm going to do that by presenting one concept. It's the fundamental one. There are eight concepts in Bowen theory, but the fundamental one is the concept of differentiation. So first slide, please. The first thing that we're going to look at is anxiety. So I'm a therapist, so I'm very familiar with the mental health field and so on. But one of the things that's very clear in Bowen theory is anxiety is not pathology. It's not that this is some kind of a mental illness. The idea is that anxiety is very natural. Think of living systems that function to survive with either fight or flight. It's been true since evolution. So that's not pathological. That's just how it is. So there is anxiety, but then the question is, how does a living system respond to that anxiety? And as that system responds to the anxiety, that develops patterns. And those patterns, as we're talking about the human living system, defines the self. It defines who you are. And the basic process that operationalizes this anxiety and how to manage it is decision making. So when we're talking about decision making, we're talking about a full range from immediate to long term. So for example, it can range from, should I have another piece of pie? Should I go to bed early? Should I get a divorce? Should I choose a particular medical treatment? Should I change my job? And so on and on. So we're always making decisions all day long and all lifelong. And that is, again, thinking of natural systems and living systems. That's how species have survived, to make decisions about what to do in the natural world. So there's anxiety, and how do you manage it? How do you respond to it? So for Bowen, there are two basic ways. One is fusion, and fusion is an emotional response to the anxiety. So this is based in the brain, the amygdala, where that's the part of the brain that responds to emergencies, to threats. And it's a very reactive, automatic response, and it tends to be determined by chronic patterns that have gone on and on. But when we're talking about the human and we're talking about how you respond, it's less effective over the long term because it's less specific to the situation. There's a limited repertoire. So for example, it could be a pattern where, confronted with some anxiety, you always push back, problem solve, gotta fix this. Or the opposite, always yield, never mind, I'm just gonna forget it, it's not worth it. So if the fusion response then is based on a more limited repertoire. I always like the expression that if all you got is a hammer, then everything is a nail. And so that's the idea. I always do the same thing. And it's focused on the other. It's focused on what is this challenge, this anxiety, this threat. And the more the response is automatic, Bowen characterized that as fusion. Now, in the other direction, differentiation, again, the fundamental concept of the theory, it's a more thoughtful response. And in the brain, this is based in the cortex, the front part of the brain that is where the cognitive functions operate. So it's less automatic. It's more determined by the needs of the situation. Well, wait a minute, what should I do in this situation? I gotta think this through. It's not automatic. I don't have an immediate response. Longer term, there is a better ability to regulate the responses to the anxiety. It's not that everything is a nail. Wait a minute, maybe this isn't a nail. So over time, there is an increased ability to respond to changing situations because there is a larger repertoire. I've got more than a hammer. But in order to do a more differentiated response, you have to focus on yourself. You have to step back and say, wait a minute, I gotta think about this. Now, as you can see, these are two responses, but they are on a continuum. So the higher functioning is differentiation and the lower functioning is fusion, but it's always a combination of both. And so the way Bowen characterized it, he put it on a scale, and the higher functioning people are the ones who had a greater ability to have differentiated, to respond with differentiation. So, and as you can see on my slide there, that then those patterns of response to anxiety, the higher the level of functioning is, the higher level of ability to differentiate, which is then defines who you are. Okay, next slide, please. Now, take everything that I've been talking about here, decision-making patterns of responding to anxiety, and that pertains to the individual, to you and me and everybody else. But Bowen theory is a systems theory, and systems is a completely different way of thinking from individual thinking, from individual theory. It's a paradigm shift. Just can't get there from here. You can't blend it, negotiate it. It's just a different paradigm. Is the world flat or is it round? Well, it's sort of both. pretty hard to think that. It's one or the other. You have to think in a different paradigm. So what's the difference between individual thinking and systems thinking? Basically, the way I've always taught it is systems thinking is not reductionist to the individuals. A system is not composed of individuals that are in relationship with each other, which is how you tend to think. Now, that can work when you're thinking of a mechanical system, like a car. So in an automobile, you have an engine with pistons that drive a crankshaft that then engage the transmission and turn the wheels. So if something goes wrong, and of course we all know that things go wrong, you can take out an old transmission and put a new one in. But think about that when we're talking about living systems, where the human body does not have these parts that you can just take out and put in another part. Think of kidney transplants. Well, we're just going to put another kidney in here. No, that's not how it works. That's why they have to use all kinds of drugs to get the body to not reject that part, because the body has an automatic response to what it sees as something alien. And that's because that kidney is not just a kidney. The kidney is an organ that is embedded in a whole set of relationships in that body. So then we're not talking about just all these organs that put together and create a body. It creates the whole system. So then in terms of humans and the self, individuals are not autonomous. They're not separate. Humans are always in relationship with one another. But because it's a system, it's always in motion, in a balance that keeps the whole system intact. And that's what maintains the integrity of the system. And we're talking about you and your body. It's what keeps you alive. Sometimes I think about there are not individuals, but there are relationships that create individuals. That's a pretty different way of thinking. So what it means to think systems is to always think bigger. Think in terms of everything that's connected. I like to tell a story about when I was first learning how to understand family therapy, and I thought I was a hotshot family therapist back in the 70s. And so there was this consultant that came to my agency, and I had just done a live session with a family. And so we were doing the debriefing. And so he said, all right, so what do you know about the relationship between the mother and the father? So I said a few things. He said, okay, now what do you know about the mother and the son? So I said a few things. He said, okay, now what do you know about the mother's mother and the grandson? Well, I didn't know quite as much. I knew something. And then he said, so what do you know about that mother's mother who's no longer alive and that son's relationship with her? Well, I didn't know too much about that. And then he just took me down to my knees. And finally, the point was, you need to know all these relationships to understand this nuclear family that you are working with. Never forgot that story. All right, so now let's transpose what I talked about in the beginning about anxiety and responses to anxiety that develops into patterns, and put that into systems theory. So what we've got then is anxiety, but it's anxiety in the system. It's not anxiety in the individual. It's anxiety in the set of relationships where the patterns of those responses stabilize the balance of the whole system. Think of fusion in a crowded room where somebody yells fire. You know that that isn't a matter of, well, let me tell the person next to me that there's a fire. Hey, do you know that there's a fire? It just goes through it like electricity. That's that system. And the anxiety goes right through that system as all those people in that room are connected. Think of a large crowd exiting a stadium. And so sometimes as you're in a crowd, you may feel like you're just a little cog in this, or a little ant in this huge crowd. So that if you are feeling like you are an individual person. You have this sense of this large system that is balanced around everybody getting out of the stadium. Now contrast that with a more differentiated system, say a team sport, say basketball, where the team is on a fast break. And so they each know their role, and it's very much live and in motion, and they each know what they need to do to be able to execute that successfully. That's more differentiation. So that's the idea of anxiety in the system. Now, think about differentiation from a systems framework. So before, I was presenting differentiation in terms of how you are more thoughtful and control your automatic responses. Now, think about systems and think about how the task now is to hold your own with the dynamics of a whole system and all the forces that are organizing that balance. So it's not just with one person, it's with the larger system. So then you can think about, so what are some patterns of a system that handles, that has anxiety in it, that you need to hold your own and balance and deal with your own responses to this anxiety in the system? Think about, and you PPI members certainly are very used to this, think about a pattern with a family of wealth that feels very entitled and does not want to hear about any other changes to that. Think about a poor family who are always striving and they don't want to hear anything about just having to accept certain things because the anxiety is about being poor and always having to push back and always having to strive. Think about a family where the anxiety is around loyalty to a particular religion and any other religions are heresies. Think about education, where some families are always determined to better themselves through education and don't want to hear anything about not going to college. You just always have to strive to be more educated. Or think about ethnic patterns for different ethnicities where they experience lots of discrimination. So how do they handle questions about their own ethnicity and other races, other ethnic groups? So those are all issues that can organize a family. And the question is, how do you hold your own as you're responding not just to one person from that kind of a, from that family, but to the dynamics of that person as they are part of that family pattern? Okay. Next slide, Julie. So now I want to talk about the practice of it and get it to you and PPI. So now let's talk about decision making and talk about the decision making for the advisor. What decisions do you make about what investments to recommend? And decision making by the client. What do they decide they want to do? I did a presentation at PPI last year, and I used this slide about challenging situations that seemed to work pretty well, so I decided it would be very appropriate here. So here's the situation. So here are a series of challenging situations with clients, and can you notice patterns that are typical in these situations for you? Are these familiar situations to you, for you? And what do you typically do with them? So just to go through them here, I don't care about understanding investments. Don't tell me, just tell me where to sign. I don't wanna, don't give me a lecture about all this, all the basis and the research. I just want this to work. So don't tell me anything more. Or I want constant reassurance. Are you sure this is a good investment? I don't know. You know, I've got questions. I'm not ready yet. I have to think about this. And that could go on for a long time. Or always arguing about the advice. Well, hey, I saw this thing on the internet and this investment that you recommend, there's a lot of people that don't think this is a good idea. Do you really know what you're talking about? What, you know, I don't know if I can work with you. How long have you been doing this? Or don't follow through on the agreed upon plan. Okay, so did you check with your lawyer? Did you check with your accountant? Did you set up the the arrangements that we talked about? No, I'll get to it though. Really, I will. Or the outlook is too conservative. I don't want to lose any of my principal. That's the most important thing. I don't care how old I am. I don't want to take any chances on losing anything, so I'm not interested in growth. Or too risky. You want to do what? Or troubled personal life. So the client is one that has a history and struggling with drug abuse, struggling with depression, with divorces, with patterns that are maybe very different from you. You never knew anything about anybody. This is not your world. Or just the opposite. Oh my God, this is like my life. This is like families that I am very familiar with because they're my own. Or troubled family interactions right in your office. So you're sitting there talking with the father who is trying to make some decisions about passing on wealth to the next generation, and his son says, no, I don't like what this guy's talking about. You know, I don't think we should do this. And the father's like, no, we got to do this. And then it's like, well, you never agree with me. And there they are right in your office. So how do you handle that? So, okay. So think about that, if that resonates at all for you, any of those, or several of them. Think about, what do you typically do in those situations? So this is obviously what we're talking about, differentiation. So rather than focus on them, I'm working to have you focus on yourself. So what do you know about yourself? Next slide, please. So this is the practice of Bowen theory. I've already talked to you about the theory that's based on differentiation. So the practice generally, and in these challenging situations that I've presented, are, first of all, work to understand, not change or convince. Not like, this is what you need to do, or I give up. It's not even worth talking to you. Can you instead stay in there, hang in there, and work to understand? Why don't you understand what the investment is about? Is that something that you generally don't want to understand things? Or is it just money? Is it just finances? And what about other people in your family? What about your wife? What about your parents? They always try to get me to understand, and I never want to understand anything. Or no, none of us want to understand anything. So you don't understand what's going on with the client in front of you if you can't think systems and think bigger, not in terms of the individuals, but think in bigger terms. And what are the patterns? And then there's this other idea that I've had as I've listened to some of the PPI presentations, which I totally support, always focused on how does wealth get passed on to the next generation, and what do you have to understand about patterns that go on so that you can facilitate the wealth being passed on to future generations. But if you're going to think systems, you have to know, what are the previous patterns? How did you get here? What are the patterns that have gone on that are creating the situation of these current patterns? So it's not just focused on the person in front of you or the nuclear family, focused on the next generation, but what are the previous generations? And so, for example, the shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves, how did they get from shirt sleeves to wealth and back to shirt sleeves? How does that go? Is there a longer pattern? So you don't understand the future patterns, the future generations, from my point of view, if you don't understand how the family got there from the previous generations. So then the focus here is, as I said, to focus on yourself to manage the anxiety that's presented by the challenge. So the more you can do that, the better you will be able to do what I'm talking about, which is to observe and understand. And one of the ways to do that is to get to know your own patterns. If you don't have a clue about how you typically respond, then as you try to understand them, you're not able to really understand them because you may just be using the hammer again. So can you develop other ways of listening so that you can understand better? Anxiety always gets in the way of understanding. Next slide, please. Now, I have developed this framework of magnifier, minifier, magmin. And John A. and I have done some calls about that. You can find that those calls on, I put them on my website, but they're also in the archives, the PPI archives. And I recommend those as because right now I'm only gonna have about 5 minutes to present MagMin, and it takes a whole lot longer to do that. So here's the idea. I developed this pattern, or this framework, out of my experience as a therapist. So it's based in Bowen theory. And the way I think about it is that it's a model of Bowen theory. Think about weather maps. Think about you trying to check the weather. And so they put up a graphic. And so you see these pretty graphics with big H's and L's and colors. And sometimes they're in motion and you see the air currents and so on. Well, that graphic is based in meteorological theory. There are all kinds of formulas that map is based on. But as Bateson said, the map is not the territory. It's not what's really going on, but it's based on it. And so that's how I think about MagMin. It's a model of Bowen theory, based in the theory, but it's a model. And one of the ways that models work is you can work with them. They allow you to figure out what the weather is going to be because you can understand it and know what you need to do. So here's a very brief statement of MagMin. We're talking about anxiety in the system and the response to that anxiety. And I have discovered there are two basic patterns of people. One is the magnifier response and the other is the minifier response. The magnifier operates from an assumption that it's all going to work out. Don't worry about it. I don't care. This is going to work, and don't tell me about any problems because I don't want to hear about them because I'm just going to make this work no matter what. And the minifier assumes, no, this is not going to work out. Things never work out for me. They never have. So this isn't any different. So this just isn't even worth trying because it's not going to work out. Don't tell me about possibilities. So I use this as a guide for working with patterns. Now, what I just described there in those assumptions are fused responses. So I have a graphic that I use where I put the magnifier and minifier response on opposite ends of the continuum. And so you have the magnifier on one end and the minifier on the other end. Now, the magnifier that operates from fusion, remember we talked about fusion, it's an automatic response. And so the automatic response is, I don't care, it's going to work out. And for the minifier on the other end of the continuum is, I don't care, it's not going to work out, so it's not even worth trying. So as it's on a continuum, the higher functioning, higher differentiation is in the middle of the continuum. So what that means is that magnifiers always have to work in the direction of allowing limitations. Magnifiers do not allow limitations. They don't like it. because I don't want to hear about things that don't work out. And minifiers just as much do not want to hear about possibilities. But the anxiety, and this is the anxiety in the self, in the person, not the other, as you look at yourself, is what does it take for me as a magnifier to allow the possibility that this may not work out? Oh my God. And just as much, the same anxiety for the minifier is, well, I guess I could allow, I could think about this a little bit. Maybe it could work out. So as I have there on the slide, the guide for working with your own patterns to increase your ability to differentiate is for mags always to work in the direction of allowing limits. And for minifiers to always work in the direction of allowing potential. If you go back to some of those challenging situations, if the person really doesn't, let me pick another one. The next one, the client always wants reassurance. So if you're a magnifier, they want reassurance. It's like, oh no, come on, just do it, will you? This isn't hard, just come on. You can do this, I know what I'm talking about. Well, if you're a magnifier, can you step back and say, maybe they can't do this, maybe they have a hard time, maybe they're scared. So what does it take to understand why they are so afraid and need some reassurance? On the other hand, if you are a minifier and the person needs reassurance, it's like, yeah, I know. I don't know if this is a great idea anyway. I know, I'm not sure about all these things that I'm doing either. You know, I have to second guess myself a lot. So in both those situations, those are reactive responses that do not serve the client well. So that's where I'm presenting MagMin as a guide for working with the patterns. So that's you as a PPI member working with your clients, working to understand them, but also using their responses as a way to focus on yourself and understand your own patterns. Now, Bowen theory is not, he developed, he was a psychiatrist, it developed out of family therapy, out of mental health, but it's basically a theory for living life. And so it has applicability for not just you with your clients, but if it's useful for you working with your clients to manage yourself to be a higher functioning person with higher levels of differentiation, why can't that work with your husband or your children or your parents? So it's quite possible that as you work on yourself in your practice with your clients, you may find that you are able to operate better in your own family. So then Bowen theory can be useful for you in your own self-development. And then if you want to take even a step further, then sometimes people are really interested in Bowen theory itself. And you may well want to understand more about the theory. You could actually get connected to a Bowen therapist and do some more work on yourself by working with your own family. And that's something you could do. I have it as the resource. So Julie, maybe you can put up the last slide on the resources. So you can see that the top one there is the Bowen website for the Bowen Center. That's the basic center in Washington, D.C., where they have a really good website for organizing Bowen theory and understanding it. And the next one is the Bowen Academy, which is Michael Kerr, who worked hand in hand with Bowen for years and is working on developing Bowen theory. I find his website very interesting. Then there's my website, tshure.com, where it's based in Bowen theory, but I'm working with developing self and systems, which is my framework based in Bowen theory. And you can also find MagMin there. And then with the books, there's Bowen's basic book from 1978, sort of the Bible. And then Kerr wrote Family Evaluation to pull all of Bowen's ideas together. And he just has a new book coming out, which I have not read yet. And then there's Ed Friedman, who was one of Bowen's early students. And his is more focused on Bowen theory and organizations, very focused on leadership. And then there's my book on Magnet. So I think that's about it. So John A., if you want to come back in and see if people have questions.
Tom, that was great. Julie's just thrown up on the screen how you raise your hand or ask a question to participate live. Unfortunately, those who are calling in, we can't bring you into the conversation, but we'd love to hear comments or questions from anyone. And we have a lot of people with us today, so I'm hoping we'll get a few brave souls that'll raise their hands or use the chat box if you want to just write out a question and answer that you would like us to take.
And Johnny, I would like to just say that when you're saying people being brave, it's there just aren't any dumb questions. This theory is very comprehensive and a lot to understand, but it's also very intuitive. So you're probably right as you have a question that makes sense.
Well, we'll wait here to see if we get a brave volunteer to break the ice and raise their hand. Julie, if you would kind of watch for that. I'm going to throw a question or two at you, Tom, that just occurred to me as you were going through. It is a family systems theory. And we do observe anxiety in the family system. Oftentimes, we're working with the family as an entirety. But when you have an opportunity to separate a family member who is challenged, as you put it, in differentiation and is very reactive, if there was one thing that you would start challenging them to think about using this one technique or tool to try to manage their reactivity to be able to increase their differentiation, what would that one suggestion be, Tom?
First, I would say that you need to be thinking not about trying to get rid of this person so that you can have a better meeting. So it's certainly possible that somebody could totally disrupt a meeting and you can't get anywhere. But then rather than saying you need to leave and consider them the problem, I would say this probably happens at home. This is not unusual. This family is used to dealing with this. So one of the things that I would be thinking about is to ask the family, so how should we handle this? How do you handle this at home? So you put the put it back in their court, which is, all right, you want to have a meeting. We need to discuss this stuff. How do we handle this? And they would probably tell you some patterns. Well, we just tell them to shut up. Or we put them off, we just don't invite them to things. And so what I'm saying in terms of observation, unless it's absolutely disruptive to the meeting, I think you need to have them there to understand what I was talking about, which is to be able to observe the family. What did they do with this person? Because the idea of getting rid of the person and then going on to plan what kind of investments you're going to do, don't tell me that person isn't going to be involved in sabotaging that. So better to have them there and have the family trying to figure out what to do with him and that disruption rather than think you can simplify it by extruding him.
Okay. Adam Hoffman has raised a question. And Julie, I'm going to see, can we try to, Adam, if you're willing, let's see if we can bring you into the conversation. If not, I'll just share the question that you've posed and the Q&A box, but Julie, if you could try to open Adam's mic at our end.
I'm probably open now.
There you are. Adam, thank you. Would you feel comfortable? I think the question you've asked is really an excellent one. I'd love to have you frame it for Dr. Scher.
Sure. Very early in my introduction to Bowen theory, hello everyone. I actually read it for the first time from a draft of Steve Legler's upcoming book on it, which I really enjoyed, and which is really just an introduction. He's certainly not prescribed as a Bowen expert himself. He's probably on the call, but I was looking for the elevator pitch, the way to describe the value that Bowen theory can bring to family meetings, specifically to the wealth creator, or at least in my world, the first generation is sort of the stickiest, the most difficult to explain most things family facilitation and family governance. So it's a topic that's come up with a few different resources, and I'd love to hear how you use or how you explain the value of Bowen theory to anyone stubborn, but in my world, the wealth creators.
Well, Adam, one of the things that I would say is I don't have an elevator pitch. And that's because I'm never, including right now, trying to sell Bowen theory. I'm just presenting it. And so that's what I'm doing here on this call and with you. And so in a similar way, I am not advocating that you try to sell Bowen theory to your clients. If anything, what Bowen theory is about is how you use it for yourself. And in my own psychotherapy practice, a lot of my clients know that I operate from Bowen theory, but a whole lot of them have no idea. And my way of practicing is that they don't need to know, because I need to know. So I'm probably going to disappoint you, because I am not able to give you any techniques about how you sell this. Actually, you could argue, just to flip this around and say, trying to sell Bowen theory is a fusion response. It's you need them to buy in for you to be successful. Rather, you present it and then see, you present yourself and see what they do with it. So I think that might be disappointing to you, but that's also, I'm staying really congruent with the theory itself.
No, I wouldn't say that's disappointing. I think what you're pointing out is the same problem that I'm having is like, what? How do you approach the buy-in? Like, how do you, so if the term elevator pitch or however that sort of sales language gets in the way of that conversation, maybe if you just reframe it, it is still the same question is
and I think what I would say to you is don't try and sell it at all.
So what I hear, Tom, is your suggestion to Adam and to all of us really is that primarily in terms of its application into the work that we do with families, whether it's facilitating a family meeting, being in a more, a less structured family gathering where conversations taking place, however we're showing up with family present, the usefulness of the theory is largely what it does for us.
Yes.
And how we show up. And so if we really try to, but let me then, I'm going to kind of piggyback on your question, Adam, and ask Tom, one of the things that many skilled family meeting facilitators do, in fact, one of our deans, Bruce Dabosky, is famous for saying we need to create a safe zone. Jim Grubman has done two, one of our PPI fellows, Dr. Jim Grubman has done two calls in the relatively recent past, within the last 3 or 4 months at most, that have focused on ground rules for family meetings. To what extent are those ground rules congruent with Bowen theory, or how do the ground rules, in a sense, how would you filter or interpret the ground rules? Because the ground rules are attempting to create a pattern of behavior and expectations around how we interact with each other. So they're trying, in a sense, to prescribe a differentiation within every person in the room. Is there any other way to look at ground rules and how they play into Bowen theory, if at all?
Yeah. Oh, I think that can be quite congruent. One of the ways that I would say it is the ground rules are set by the advisor. So this is what the advisor wants to do in terms of their principles, how they operate. And so then the ground rules are very appropriately creating a safe place. One of the things that Bowen theory is about, as I've presented so much, is anxiety. And what a safe place, safe space does through the ground rules is create a place where the anxiety doesn't drive the meeting. So it's okay, this is how we're going to operate. But if the ground rules become other focused, and listen, this is what you need to do, then they're not ground rules, then they're you imposing some behavioral directions on what people are doing. No, this is just how we do it. This is how I do it. So I think, and one of the things that I talk a lot with my supervisees and so on, as they are doing supervision, is the more the supervisor can be grounded in self, the safer the supervisees and the clients feel, because the anxiety is not put on the clients. The advisor handles the anxiety themselves. So then I think that's very consistent. Can I say one other thing?
Yeah.
In terms of Adam's question about a pitch and selling it, I'm also really clear, and John A., you and I know this really well. Here I am presenting this Bowen theory to PPI. And it's not because I have this mission that I'm going to teach PPI Bowen theory. I am following the lead of a lot of people in PPI that are interested in this. So I don't have to sell it. I'm responding to an interest. And I will be very careful of not crossing that line if I get a sense that people are not interested. So I think I'm walking the talk here and just responding to the interest that's there.
Thank you, Tom. Adam, anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, no, I thought that was wonderful. Thanks for that. It was detailed. And yes, I'm still, as you can imagine, I'm still trying to gather my own skill as a facilitator. And I expect this to be a wonderful tool like many of the other people in PPI. So thanks for your presentation.
Good.
Tom, I'm going to throw one other question at you, and this is just because I'm still hoping that others will follow Adam's example and lead us to some observations or questions that will further the conversation this morning. Triangles is another aspect of Bowen theory. I think when you talk about triangles, many people readily understand the principle or the theory of triangles and will immediately relate to how often they see triangles within the family systems that they're serving. And I know that triangles are very fluid, that the person who's in a sense on the out can very quickly move into a different position in that triangle and suddenly be on the inside. But help us learn, Tom, when we observe a triangle in action in a family meeting, is is it our responsibility as facilitator, consultant, advisor, who is familiar with Bowen theory, is it our responsibility to take any action, or how should we approach the triangle? Do we just let it play out and observe it? What do we do with triangles when we see them?
That's a great question, Johnny. Triangles is one of the other concepts. And let me connect it to differentiation that I presented here today. So let's use an example. Adam talked about the wealth creator. And so let's say you're sitting down with the wealth creator and his daughter. And so you got this great relationship with him, the father, and the daughter is feeling like, oh, you two guys, this is all about you guys figuring out money. And, you know, I'm never included in this. And so then you try to include her and she says, no, you're just, you know, one of these other males and whatever. And so there's a triangle with you in the inside position with the wealth creator, the father, and him and her in the outside position with him and with you. And so chances are that's a pattern that's gone on for a long time in that family, and here it is playing out in your office. So then what do you do with that? And as I was working with Adam about focusing on self and not trying to sell this thing, so now think about fusion response. So if the fusion response of you is, oh, no, come on, let me include you. I want to include you. And then she rejects you. It's like, come on. Then I'd say you are caught, and you are caught with siding with the father and continuing to leave her out as you're not observing, not letting her have her say by trying to convince her that she ought to get on board. So then when you ask John A., what do you do with that? Then you focus on self, and what Bowen theory is all about in triangles is staying neutral. So then you have to find a way, not necessarily to drag her in, but to not be so aligned with the wealth creator. And so then it comes back to the observation. So maybe asking the father, does this go on a lot with your daughter? And asking the daughter more about, so why do you feel so excluded from all this? I need to understand this. So then she is included by not trying to include her, but just by staying neutral yourself and trying to understand. And then Bowen theory and that's related to differentiation. So that means you have to focus on yourself and see what it takes for you to include her just by observing and not try to convince her. And so then you get back to yourself by controlling your reactive responses, and then that's a higher level of differentiation. And then the last conceptual piece to add to that is where triangles and differentiation are connected is lower functioning triangles are ones that are stabilized always in this one pattern. One person is always excluded and two people are always on the inside position, and it never changes depending on the situation. And so that's fusion, automatic response, automatically in the outside, automatically in the inside. And so higher levels of differentiation allow a person to be on the outside depending on the situation. It could be very appropriate. This doesn't have anything to do with me. I don't need to be included in this. So then that's more thoughtful based on the situation, not an automatic response.
Thank you, Tom. I'd like to come back if we have time, because I have a follow-on to what you just shared with us. But we have an excellent observation from Eric Weiner. Eric Weiner and Julie, could you open Eric's line? Because I'd prefer that Eric share this, if possible, rather than my read his question.
Hello?
There you are, Eric. Oh. Thank you.
Well, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read something just yesterday about the concept of territoriality as it relates to the artifacts that family members argue about. And I think we've probably all seen, I've seen it in my own family and others, where family members fight more over the stuff than they do, you know, money in many cases. And this, it just really got me thinking, and it seems to me it is consistent with Bowen theory in the sense that animals will fight over land, they'll fight over the territory they believe they own, so to speak. So it becomes a really deeply rooted, reactive kind of response to, you know, who's going to get the grandfather clock. It's just something I've just recently been thinking about and wondering if this is something you've given thought to. And it seems really relevant to what, you know, we often see through our work as it relates to PPI. That's just what I've been thinking about lately. I'm wondering if you've seen this, Tom or John A., and what your thinking might be.
I guess my response would be to put whatever they do about the stuff into the pattern of how do they do it, and go back to how the system is organized. So some people in a family are entitled. No, I get this stuff. This is mine. And somebody else is like, well, I never get what I deserve anyway. So you can also, you talk about territoriality, you can go back to evolution, and this is my territory, this is my space, and you fight over it or you give up and whatever. So to me, I would just generalize it. And one of the things that I say to my, have said to my students, I can't say students anymore because I'm retired, but to my supervisees, I will ask the question, how does this family do anxiety? And so some families will do anxiety around possessions. And of course that can happen developmentally as the older generation gets ready to pass on the stuff. It didn't come up so much earlier, and now it comes up around this developmental stage, but it's the old pattern again. Here we go again. Now what are we gonna do with the stuff? So I can't say that if a family is really organized around their stuff and who's entitled or whatever, then to me that would be the pattern or that family and how it does it. But I can't put that like in a separate category.
Thank you.
Eric, it's an extremely interesting observation and thought, this territoriality and stuff. Thank you for raising it, sharing it with us. You've probably heard me say that I believe that a majority of family squabbles, sibling squabbles, family fracturing can be traced back, at least in part, to disputes over stuff, objects, territory. And I don't know, Tom, how this fits into Bowen theory. I'll let you be the final arbiter. But I've often felt that part of the reason for the emotional volatility that occurs following death in dealing with the decisions regarding stuff and who ultimately ends up with stuff, that volatility is heavily influenced by the disruption of the family system that has occurred through the death of a patriarch or matriarch. And I could be completely off base, Tom, so any thoughts you have on this would be greatly appreciated. To me, it's as if suddenly there's a power vacuum. I sometimes analogize it to Christmas gifts under the Christmas tree with no names on the packages. And it's just natural that in that setting, in that circumstance, you're going to have a lot of this power struggle that we might call territoriality. And that it just seems that more often than not in that situation, people play out again the patterns and play the tapes that have existed since childhood and adolescence. So Tom, any other thoughts that you would throw on my observation or reaction to Eric's point?
Well, first of all, I felt a little bad I couldn't respond more specifically to Eric. But what occurred to me as I'm listening to you is you guys deal with stuff. I don't deal with stuff. I deal with people having
trouble. You should feel fortunate.
I'm dealing with people that are, you know, struggling with their relationships. So I think that's the difference in the two professions. So that's why I can't relate more specifically to that. So I go back to the patterns. But in terms of your situation, what you described, John A., is that when there is a death in the family of a matriarch, an important person, that certainly disrupts the balance of the system. But then I would argue that, and you said this, that how do they respond to that crisis, to that disruption? And you have to know the patterns of how they would respond to grief and loss. But if you know what those patterns are, then it won't be such a surprise to you about how they deal with the grief and loss. And then when it's about distributing the stuff, then they're going to fall back on their old patterns as they have to deal with what are we going to do with the stuff.
So, Eric, here's my final thought on this as I listen to Tom's reaction. It occurs to me that perhaps the greatest value that awareness of Bowen theory in all its multi-splendor dimensions would bring to the stuff, the parting of the stuff, is from the planning design standpoint and the work that we do with families to prepare them for transitions, is if at those earliest stages before the event, the death has occurred, if we could, in the earlier stages of planning and family governance work, if we could be observing, looking for patterns, asking the family about patterns, and then thinking carefully about what the natural implications of those patterns would be and what suggestions we could offer to, in a sense, disrupt existing patterns and help replace those with healthier patterns and what it would take to do that. That's monumental work, but that's maybe where we're going to have the greatest success. Although refereeing and trying to be an arbiter of the parting out of the stuff is another opportunity, it's just, to me, thankless work. And I would much rather put our energy into earlier, in a sense, interventions to try to devise better patterns to help the family grow into those patterns and respect those patterns once the death has occurred.
John A., I think that's great. That is so well said. That's the long-term view as you develop a relationship with this family versus trying to help them organize how they're going to sort out the stuff. As you get to know the system and the patterns, then you are able to help them anticipate problems in the future, as well as when those problems come up, you're already there. You've already laid the groundwork for that. I think that's a great idea.
Eric, any parting thoughts?
Well, I'm reminded of the work of, I know you know his name, but the company called FairSplit.
Yes, David McMahon and FairSplit. And anybody that is exactly, Eric, thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking of when I was referencing this opportunity to bring a new pattern, a new structure into play. David's FairPlay system is really, I think, could be a great tool to avoid reactivity and get around some of the territoriality.
Because it's a neutral process.
Yes.
Or a process based on neutrality. So it really helps to reduce the reactivity that's often involved in situations.
You know, we should probably have, thank you, Eric, for reminding me about David. We We should probably have a call with David one of these days. Again, I think we did a call a few years ago when he was just launching Bearsplit. He's had some serious success in the marketplace in getting acceptance to the system. And PPI can take a lot of credit for having been responsible for the development of that system. So proud of where he's taken it and gone with it. I apologize, Steve Legler had his hand up and I didn't see it. So we missed an opportunity because Steve, I think, had to go to hear from Steve Legler, who Adam had referred to earlier. Tom, I want to just turn this back to you if you can wrap up and 30, 90 seconds with any parting comments you have, and then we'll let Julie announce upcoming calls.
Well, I've enjoyed this a lot. It's been fun. And so that's why I like to do this, because I get a lot out of just presenting this and hearing the responses. And I really like what you just said, John A., about the long-term thing. I think that we're going to have to think about that some more in terms of what about Bowen theory and PPI in the future, in terms of having a more far-reaching perspective about the next generation by understanding the previous patterns so that you can work with that. So that's one of my takeaways from this that I think is really good.
Well, I had no doubt when we entered into the conception of this program today that it would leave a lot of room for further development, further teaching, further learning. So happy to hear your response. Julie, going to turn it back to you for upcoming calls.
All right. Thanks again, everyone, for